Oh, I love it when things come out about the Giza Plateau. Professor Filippo Biondi, a satellite radar specialist with a background in radar with the Italian government, sat down with Matt Beal and stated that he had found a second Great Sphinx on Giza, buried beneath a 180-foot mound of compacted sand on the plateau. Horizontal passageways extending from deeper underground sections both show shafts that are descending down to depth. They both show horizontal tunnel systems extending outward, and they both show the same geometric internal arrangement. So what I was told quietly in Malta when I was with Filippo Biondi and the rest of the Khafre Pyramid team has now been disclosed on Matt Beal's Limitless podcast, which I was also on recently. Links for that are in the description box. But this time it was my friend Professor Filippo Biondi on the podcast, and he sent the internet into a frenzy over recent scans pointing towards what could be a second Sphinx on the Giza Plateau. Professor Filippo Biondi, a satellite radar specialist with a background in radar with the Italian government, sat down with Matt Beal and stated that he had found a second Great Sphinx on Giza, buried beneath a 180-foot mound of compacted sand on the plateau, and that the geometric precision of its alignment with the known Sphinx and the Pyramid of Khafre was, in his exact words, 100%. But here's what makes the story genuinely extraordinary. The idea of a second Sphinx is not new, and it did not originate in 2026. It goes back 4,500 years. It was woven into the oldest strata of Egyptian theology. It's mentioned in medieval Islamic scholarship. It was discussed by Greek and Roman travelers. It's been pursued by independent Egyptologists for decades, and in 2026, it acquired for the first time a body of satellite data, a geometric coordinate, and a researcher prepared to attach his professional reputation to a specific location. Hit that subscribe button. Please just whack that subscribe button with your finger right now. That's the best way to support me. Drop a comment below in the comment section, like the video, share the video online. But above all else, hit that subscribe button. Make sure you tickle that notification bell as well, otherwise YouTube doesn't send you the videos. Ancient Egyptian cosmology encoded the twin Sphinx into its understanding of the universe. Akhir was one of the most ancient gods in the entire Egyptian pantheon, first depicted in the reign of Pharaoh Dier, fourth king of the first dynasty, placing him at the very dawn of dynastic Egyptian civilization around 3000 BC. He was the god of the horizon, the earth, and the threshold of the underworld. His role was to guard the passage of the sun god Ra through the Duat, the underworld, each night, and to release him again at dawn. His iconography is the key to everything. Akhir was depicted not as a single creature, but as two recumbent lion torsos merged together, sitting back to back, each facing an opposite horizon. By the Middle Kingdom, he was firmly established as a pair of twin lions, one named Duaj, tomorrow, and the other Sefe, yesterday. The two lions sat back to back with a sun disk, or the hieroglyph for horizon, placed between them. The Egyptian Museum in Cairo houses several artifacts depicting this precisely. This aligns with the belief of individuals like Graham Hancock that the Sphinx was originally a lion orientated towards the constellation of Leo, modified by later cultures into a Sphinx. If true, the Sphinx, or more accurately, lion, would go back to roughly 10,500 BC. So could the twin Sphinx, or the twin lion, be hiding underneath that mound? And imagine if it was discovered in lion form. That would be extremely provocative evidence for the Sphinx being altered by ancient Egyptian cultures. But the twin lions likely existed long before dynastic Egypt. In later dynastic representations, Akhir evolved further. The twin lion forms were increasingly depicted as twin sphinxes with human heads, two recumbent sphinx figures back to back, guarding opposite ends of the solar corridor beneath the earth. Again, this indicates an evolution from lion to sphinx, which could have easily translated to an alteration of twin lion statues on the Giza Plateau to twin sphinxes as beliefs and ideas and iconography changed over time. The theological message was precise and unambiguous. The guardian of the horizon was always two, never one. One faced east towards the rising sun, towards tomorrow. One faced west towards the setting sun, towards yesterday. Together they enclosed the tunnel through which the solar barge traveled. Together they defined the sacred threshold. The Great Sphinx of Giza faces due east. It watches the rising sun. In Egyptian cosmology, this makes it one half of the Akka pair, the western-facing twin. The guardian of yesterday, of sunset, of the entrance to the underworld, would logically sit behind it, facing west, facing the desert, facing the opposite direction. Positioned between the front paws of the Great Sphinx since approximately 1401 BC, the Dream Stele, attributed to Pharaoh Thutmose IV, is a 15-ton slab of pink granite, 360 centimeters tall, 218 centimeters wide. The story it tells is famous. A young prince falls asleep near the Sphinx, dreams it speaks to him as the god Hormaket, promises him the throne of Egypt if he will clear the sand burying its body, and Thutmose awakens to fulfill the bargain and become pharaoh. But look at the upper register of the stele, the carved scene above the text. It's divided into two panels, left and right. In both panels, Pharaoh Thutmose IV is shown making offerings, and in both panels, he's making those offerings to the Sphinx, which appears twice on two separate pedestals, one on each side. The text specifies in both cases that the figure on the pedestal is Harmakhis, the name of the Sphinx as a deity. One scholar's close translation of the stele arch reads, "The arch of the stele has the representation of two leaning sphinxes lying on plinths. In both cases, the text specifies that it is Harmakhis." Now, mainstream Egyptology's position is that this is standard New Kingdom artistic convention, with the deity appearing symmetrically on each side as a compositional device. But the secondary reading, that the dual sphinx imagery is literally depicting two sphinxes, as Ecker's theology requires, has never actually been conclusively disproved or even meaningfully explored by the mainstream. And so once again, it's up to those outside of the old boys club of mainstream archaeology, up to groups like the Khafre Pyramid Project, to begin shedding light on the possibilities. It's important to note that the Dream Stele is incomplete. A large crack running through the stone has destroyed approximately half of the original text, beginning at the 12th line and running to the bottom. So whatever the full inscription contained, whatever additional description of the Sphinx's sacred landscape Thutmose IV commissioned is gone, lost and possibly forever. But one of the most tangible pieces of evidence for the Second Sphinx claim is not from radar or mythology, it's just simply visible from above. Satellite imagery of the Giza Plateau clearly shows a raised mound of compacted sand and debris to the northwest of the existing Sphinx, in the vicinity where Biondé's geometric calculations place the second structure. Filippo Biondé describes this mound as not natural bedrock. We're very sure, he says, that this is not bedrock. The sand has solidified. So if this observation about the sand's composition is correct, it would suggest deliberate compaction, the kind that might be expected from intentional burial. The critical point that no one has excavated this mound with the specific hypothesis of a second sphinx in mind. So Zahi Hawass's claim that the relevant area for the sphinx has been dug by so many archaeologists and it's yielded nothing, that refers to the theory of a second sphinx on the opposite bank of the Nile, or to an earlier proposed location, but not to the specific geometric position that Biondé's 2026 analysis is targeting. The most sustained pre-Biondé case for a second Giza Sphinx belongs to Egyptian Egyptologist Bassam El-Shammah, who spent more than 10 years compiling textual, archaeological, and satellite evidence for his hypothesis. El-Shammah's argument rests on several interlocking claims. Egyptian sphinxes in all documented cases come in pairs. Avenues, temple entrances, processional routes all feature paired sphinxes. The Great Sphinx, being singular, is in of itself an anomaly with no parallels in Egyptian architectural practice. Ancient Egyptian texts, Middle Kingdom papyrus, and later Greek and Roman accounts have also referenced a second Sphinx at or near Giza. Then you have NASA satellite imagery that was reviewed by El Shama, which shows an anomalous formation near the known Sphinx consistent with a buried large-scale limestone structure. El Shama also takes great consideration into the theological framework of Akir, the twin lion deity, which demands a western-facing counterpart to the east-facing Great Sphinx. Filippo Biondi's methodology for locating the second Sphinx didn't begin with radar, it just began with geometry. The known Great Sphinx sits at a specific position on the Giza Plateau relative to the Pyramid of Khafre. Biondi traced a line from the center of the Khafre Pyramid to the exact position of the Great Sphinx, and he then mirrored that line geometrically, reflecting it across the central axis of the Sphinx to locate its precise geometric counterpart on the opposite side. This mirroring produces a specific geographic coordinate, a point to the northwest of the existing Sphinx, which, when plotted on satellite imagery of the plateau, falls directly beneath the raised sand mound that has been visible to researchers and travelers for over 400 years. The position produced by the geometric projection matches the location of the anomalous mound. This alone doesn't prove a second Sphinx exists. The question of whether something is actually there has to now be explored, but there is more to this than a simple matchup of geometry to a mound. Biondi's harmonic SAR satellite Doppler tomography method, the same methodology used to claim subterranean structures beneath the pyramids of Giza, was subsequently applied to the sand mound. The SAR processing produced what he described as internal features within the mound, including vertical shafts of a type and orientation closely resembling those he previously detected beneath the existing Great Sphinx, horizontal passageways extending from deeper underground sections, dense linear features interpreted as the outer walls of an underground shaft rather than empty voids, and an overall structural arrangement that, in Biondi's words, shows incredible symmetry with the known structures beneath the first Sphinx. Both show shafts that are descending down to depth, they both show horizontal tunnel systems extending outward, and they both show the same geometric internal arrangement. He said that we found shafts within the original Sphinx and similar shafts within the presumed second Sphinx, and the similarities between the two sites are increasingly hard to overlook. Filippo has been explicit that this requires in-field verification. For the second Sphinx, it is crucial to conduct in-situ examinations with geologists and meticulously study the mound, but they have identified specific entrances where they can work in-situ. This means that we have a prepared project proposal for the Egyptian authorities when it comes to presenting this idea and trying to justify any sort of actual excavations of this mound, which again just seems like it should have been done at some point, if not in the ancient time, in the modern era, but apparently it's just been sitting there dormant for all of this time. And only now are we beginning to go, oh, maybe we should dig that mound up on the Giza Plateau, you know, that gigantic mound of compacted sand. Either way, this is another exciting development on the Giza Plateau, and one that I think we all hope can be explored more rigorously alongside the scans and possibilities already out there in respects to the wider subterranean structure of the Giza Plateau. I think it's abundantly clear, even without the SAR Doppler scans, that something profound and extremely large scale is hiding underneath the sand here. The amount of deep vertical shafts and subterranean entrance points on the Giza Plateau is shocking when you take the time, like I did, to walk around the desert surroundings, one shaft after another, going deep underground. Something important is down there, and I think we're edging closer towards actually getting some answers on this.